Welcome to DC TV Podcast's The Watchmen Podcast, your number one source for all things relating to HBO's Watchmen series, a series that keeps getting more and more layers with more and more mysteries. What is a box that has no key or hinges or lid, but inside golden treasure is hid? It might be Watchmen. And today we'll be discussing eggs and all of those other golden treasures hidden inside that. As always, with me are my co-hosts, Vanessa, Tony, and Wendy. Wendy, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, sure. So we start off with the Clarks. And to frame the Clarks, I don't want to get too into it, but you know, as we talk, and I think we can wrap it up at the end of it, is to talk about how the Clarks really are another Superman origin story allegory. This time the other side, not sending off from Krypton, but, you know, the family that would have received Superman, maybe? as you have John and Katie Clark, not Kent, but Clark, which is kind of, they've changed some subtle things. But John is actually the name of Jonathan Kent, is usually John Kent. And of course, Superman's son is also John Kent. So there is kind of that feeling that these you know, the Clark farm might be a stand-in for the Kent farm.
Isn't Clark often Martha Kent's, like, maiden name?
Yes. There has, on occasion, that Clark was Martha Kent's maiden name, and that's why it became Clark's first name. These are the Clarks. And we'll start off, I mean, we'll talk more about the Superman allegory, but she's reading a book in the beginning called Fog Dancing. And of course, I'm looking at it, even if it's a Fog Dancing, I didn't remember it first. But it was actually not a real book. It is a fictional book from the original Watchmen. And the author is Max Shea, who was the author of Tales of the Black Freighter, it was one of his more serious novels, Fog Dancing. But he was also kind of the writer that was recruited to the island to kind of flesh out the story of the giant squid for Veidt. And he was working with an artist who, and I'm assuming that these two were also the two that did the Black Freighter comic. I know Max Shea was, I'm assuming that the artist he worked with. And then at the end, when they finished everything with the squid, they were set out onto a boat and they thought, okay, well, this odd project for the odd Adrian Veidt is done. We're going home until he reveals that there's dynamite on the boat. And they meet a very explosive ending. So that is some of the original murders of Adrian Veidt. We'll see more later in the episode. But that was an interesting nod. And there are a lot of, Black Freighter themes in the series as a whole, but also partly in this episode, which we'll talk about later as well. So anybody else have anything to say about Fog Dancing before we talk about egg themes?
I think it's really interesting that they're tying in so many aspects of the comics, because as everybody's pointed out, most of the things that they're talking about can be traced back to the comic book. And I think that is really, really interesting.
Even stuff, I mean, obviously, you don't notice.
Yeah, like obviously it's going to, because it's not based on the movie. And I know that a lot of people might be really upset about that, because the movie Watchmen, okay, look, for all of the faults it had, the movie Watchmen until this series, and even then, this series, I think, is such a good adaptation because it's not adapting the original source material. It is doing its own thing with the original source material. So the movie, for what it was, did its bit. And we're fine with that. But this is just incredible. I'm so, every day so excited about it.
So the initial titles, they start off with an egg cracking. And I'm starting to think that now we have all of this, these themes going on. We saw a huge bit about eggs in the first episode in the cooking class at school, followed by Will. Grandpa Will cracking eggs and cooking eggs after she came back from the police station and found him, that he had unhandcuffed himself. So there is kind of a theme of eggs, especially in this one. We also get the title of the Watchmen title is Fried Egg in a Pan, spelling out Watchmen.
Yeah.
So pay attention to the egg is what I'm getting from this. I'm not entirely sure I understand, you know, the full meaning of it, but then we get Islands in the Stream, which is really setting the scene is that it's probably not today, but it doesn't seem like it could be too long ago. You guys can let me know if you think it was, because I'm kind of feeling like it was a few years ago, but there isn't anything to tell you when it took place.
I kind of think it was like maybe like a year ago, like when she first moved into town.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because that's what
did she already have the clock being built at that point, though? Because I would almost say that's where the clock was being built, but no, that it wasn't like in the middle of downtown, right? Like,
right. So that's the question: is the clock built on this farm, or is the clock someplace else, and they took whatever they found on the farm? Because she bought an awful lot of land when she bought the farm. Maybe because she didn't quite know where it was going to land. but there was an awful lot of land that maybe she would use for something. But basically what happens is that you have Islands in the Stream playing, and you see this perfect couple going through the day. She's not selling any eggs, and they're feeling depressed about it. And she goes to walk the eggs, keep hitting him over the head with the eggs, up the stairs, trips, and falls, and a bunch crack, but one goes to roll off the stairs, and the husband catches it, and he smiles, which kind of breaks the tension, because you could tell she'd had a rough day, because she didn't sell the eggs. Then that changes to them being happy couple, and you spend a lot of time with them, so I'm like, are these guys going to get killed? Am I supposed to fall in love with these people? Yeah. They get killed? But no. They are doing, they brush their teeth and sink, and they're doing a puzzle on the table, and the puzzle is Starry Night. And of course, there's a starry night outside when the meteor lands, but it's also a paint, and I don't know if this means anything, but it was the painting that was done by Van Gogh in the insane asylum after he cut off his ear. so just keep that in the back of your mind. There's some insanity, there's some stars. And then there's a knock on the door, and a shadowy figure appears outside who's come to make them an offer. And I thought this was a very interesting strategy. She comes in 3 minutes before she needs the house. And I mean, they didn't know that there was a timer on this, that she needed to get the house, but she's obviously planned for this for a long time after we see what happens next. But she comes in and she kind of says, for the next 3 minutes, you two are the most important people in the world. And she slams down an hourglass, which is interesting. We've seen a lot of clocks. This is the first hourglass, but it's still an indicator of time, that something is ticking down, that something is happening. And it does add to the stress of the situation, so it makes it easier for them to negotiate. Or maybe easier for her to manipulate them into negotiating the way she wants. But her offer is insane. First, you know, this is their farm and they don't want to sell. But then she keeps upping the offer. So it turns out that these two are really like the Kents, and that they had had a lot of trouble conceiving. But not only did she know that they'd had trouble conceiving, she knew exactly what was wrong with her, and that it was that she had unviable eggs. Now, this is an alternate reality. And I would say that, like, there are options for women who want to conceive who have unviable eggs, but in this alternate reality, they may not exist. But again, maybe it had to do with her genetic code, that she wanted something specific to her. She could have used another family member's eggs if she had another family member, but, you know, that's a long, complicated thing. At any rate, they had given up on having their own kid, but maybe somewhere they really still wanted one. And she says, so she offers them a child, and, you know, having gone through fertility treatment myself, I know what that's like. This people are promising you fairy tales. And she says, no, wait. And she pulls a classic Adrian Veidt with, you know, do you think I'm a Republic serial villain? I did this 30 minutes ago, and she already has a baby. So there is no question of whether or not whatever her fertility treatment would work. They had a baby, and they showed him the baby, like, this is your son, your genetic material, which is so completely creepy and illegal.
Yeah.
But
at least in our world.
Yeah. The timer is ticking, and this is their baby, and she's like, in $5 million to go do whatever you want. And then they're like, and your time is running out, the offer ends when the sand runs out, and
I'm like, just take it. It's important to note that she's so deadpan. There's this thing that people do when, you know, okay, everybody has that one person in their life that, you know, they can look you dead in the eye and they're like, I'm gonna murder you. And they're totally serious. And for a minute, you can't tell if they're joking or they're serious. And you're like, wait, what? And then, so this lady, she looks these people dead in the eye. And she's like, if you don't do what I want, I will murder this baby. And that's important to remember. Like, we love Lady True. Like, we really do. But it is very important to remember that this is a woman who's one of those people who can look you dead in the eye and go, I've filled this building with noxious gas and it's going to murder everyone in the next 5 minutes.
She is very deliberate in everything she does, which we can talk more about later. But this is extremely deliberate. Everything was set up perfectly. She had to do this. She didn't want a long negotiation. She just wanted to get it before the meteor impacted. She wanted to be certain it was the right place. And she had been planning. I wonder how many other babies that she made for in case the meteor veered off course or whatever it was.
Well, I'm going to assume she's like super scientist, super smart, that she was never going to be wrong.
Yes,
on where it landed.
She definitely got that. Now, somehow she became smart. Like, and I don't know if she's exactly as smart as Veidt, and we'll learn that as things go on, but she does seem that she's in that level. And she's also extraordinarily determined to complete her mission. And you've got to wonder, so some of the things I'm wondering as we're setting this scene up. First of all, let's get it out of the way that this is essentially what would happen if, let's say, Lionel Luther showed up at the Kents 3 minutes before Clark's Kal-El's shuttle hit the ground and bought, you know, the entire real estate just to get Kal-El. So there is that kind of thing that, you know, the Kents, what landed for the Kents was Superman. What is in the meteor that lands on the Clark's farm? We're obviously supposed to make a connection to Superman here. But we don't know what's in there. And the question is, and this is something we can discuss, is do we think that the Millennium Clock was built around whatever landed? Or do we think that there's something else going on and the town has other purposes? But that seems to me to be what brought her there.
Whatever's in the egg. So... I guess what was everybody's whole take on that? Because it did have definitely a comic. Oh, I just thought of something. What if whatever was in the thing is another enhanced being or has something to do with Dr. Manhattan? Oh, what if?
It could be something else. It could be something that they sent up coming back. We really could be from Mars, could be from the moon. We really don't know.
I almost wonder if it's like, well, I don't think necessarily that this is it, but it could be like one of those bodies Veidt was like shooting out from wherever he was.
That's one heck of a catapult, unless it isn't a catapult at all and he's just seeing it as a catapult. That could also be true. I'm having my theories as to the realness of the world that Veidt is living in. But we can, I mean, I don't think you're given enough clues to really know that yet, but there definitely is that kind of, is this even real? It definitely has hologram feeling to it.
Yeah, I would agree on that.
So then we see the title of the episode, which is, If You Don't Like My Story, Write Your Own, which comes from the book Things Fall Apart, written in 1958 by Chinua Achebe.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And it's ironic in that it became like a meme for, like, you know, literally, if you didn't like it, for bad writing, for if you didn't like it, you know, then you write it, you know, kind of thing. But it's not really what it's about, right? It's really about colonialism and how, you know, how a culture can be overwritten, and different perspectives on that kind of cultural extinction. We could talk more about Things Fell Apart when we get to Cal reading it. But I did think it was an interesting choice for the title, because it does, I mean, the initial reading on it is like, oh, this is speaking directly to the fans, but it actually has a much deeper meaning.
Okay. Yes. So, sorry, I had to open up the book, folks, because then we go, now that we've seen the title, we go back to
the bakery.
The bakery and
old rotting eggs at this point, I think. They've been out on the counter for quite a while.
Yeah.
And we go back to Angela doing some serious crime scene cleanup, trying to make sure that she gets rid of every single thing. And I want to point out something later when we get to another scene with Lori about that. But Angela breaks down every single little piece of the thing, and then when she goes and she finishes, and she literally saws the wheelchair, and that's what I want to talk about. She saws the wheelchair down to nothing, she scrubs everything, she throws everything away, she thinks the guy is dead and gone, but much like Legacy, all of our legacies follow us, be they good or bad. The phone rings. And her answering machine was really cute, I thought. It's the bakery, and then it says where we let bygones be Saigon. And the other cute line from, because she finds out that there's a connection, because she dropped the guy's DNA in at the center, and she goes there, and she does this cool thing where she's like, okay, there's a break-in. And the break, mm-hmm. and the police are like, oh, yeah, we're not detecting a break. And she goes, well, I'm here and I see it. So if you see anything, it's just me figuring things out.
Right.
I wish I could think of something cool to tweet about that, but I couldn't. But the other thing I want to point out about the center before I let somebody else pick it up is, number one, the little rhyming couplets are really cute. And I really like the one where the answer to life's mysteries is life's histories, which I think really kind of describes all of Watchmen. And I also like that when she goes to examine this huge major plot point, they imprint it on an acorn. And that is like the most kitschy touristy thing to ever do. Cause you know, there's people in this world that like have their little acorns and they go, I keep getting my DNA read. Here's 50 acorns that I collected when I went to do this. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the acorn and the greenhouse and the, like, ancestry. I'm, like, a big fan of dad puns, and I just thought it was all very cute, like, and very, like, a really cool display of tech, like, in a world where they don't have the internet readily available or anything like that. They, like, still have all this really cool shit, like, with holograms and virtual family trees. It's like really, really, really dope.
Yeah, when I was studying, when I was promoting The Gifted, they sent me not an ancestry.com, but they sent me a MyHeritage DNA kit, and I'm like, man, this is so much cooler that you get to play. Right? You get to see, you know, when they did MyHeritage, I get my results, and it's like, oh, you're from the Balkans, and you're 10% Hispanic, and you're this, and I'm like, what? This isn't cool. I want to know where I came from. But I think that's a common thing that we all feel, and that's definitely something Angela feels when we learn about Obi Williams and Will Reeves.
Yeah. So this I feel like we as the audience knew this, and I feel like this kind of, she probably could have put this together because, you know, she knew she was a descendant. She knew where he fit in the line. I feel like this was kind of like in case there were still people who hadn't put together who he was.
Yeah.
They wanted to kind of walk them through.
I feel like this is a really great way to showcase how a lot of Black Americans don't know what their history is. Like, because of our ancestry, we got kind of like shuffled around, you know, like, you know, cattle or whatever, back in the day. in the slavery days. So like our history is, it's very limited. Like I know kind of where my history is a little bit on my mom's side. On my mother's Puerto Rican, but on my dad's side, he's Black. It kind of like stops at a certain point. So to see the look on her face, I think it was very important for people like me, who don't know their history. I don't know. I can't trace my history back to the Balkans or whatever. I can only trace it to a limited amount. So to see her face was really, really cool. With the juxtaposition of her ancestry and like the fact that there was only one known photograph of the whole family together. And I thought it was a really great way to showcase how trauma can be passed from generation to generation. And it's not just like a societal thing. It's like in our DNA, like it's encoded, like tragedy can be encoded in us the way we, you know, move throughout our lives from the day we're born to the day we die. So I thought that scene was really powerful because we don't often see that ever in science, in sci-fi or fantasy or any kind of that, like, show. We might see that in like historical shows, but we don't see that in this kind of context. So anyway.
Well, that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing it, because you're absolutely right. Can I ask, if they had a system like that available for people, do you think, and I'll pose the question to everybody, do you think that people would, do you think you'd be interested in using it?
I'm still very suspicious about giving my DNA readily over to the government. like I want to know my history so bad, but like I usually have to just piece it together from family stories and stuff like that. I'm just very wary, even though like I know they have access to my DNA like anywhere. I can just walk anywhere. My hair is everywhere. But like, I just get really nervous about them having access to my full like line of DNA, you know, my whole history.
It's not even your history. It's your genome, right? They have your genome. They know what diseases you might have. You can be denied insurance on it. You know, there can be
terrifying.
Used for medical research. Maybe that's a good thing if you know what it's going to maybe go to, but there's not a lot of regulation on it right now. But regardless, you know, there's a feeling that if they're collecting this many people's DNA, maybe this is being used for something else.
I had a very dark thought that they were harvesting Black Americans' DNA for something very, very bad later down the road. And I was like, please don't let it go that way. But the fact that the series started with an open attack against Black Americans, I could see it happening with the harvested data from your harvested DNA data from that Greenwood Center. I had a bad thought about that.
Not even that deep, though. It might just be that Lady True and Will needed to find his genetic successors, and that this whole thing might have been set up just to find his kids. I don't know. That's a thought I had. I'm not saying there's proof for that, but
I would buy that True is that, you know, if you were to look down on the bottom of this machine, there would probably be like True Industries down there,
mm-hmm.
or whatever the name of her company was. I would buy that in a heartbeat. And I would also believe that, you know, there's there is something very sketchy that not a lot of people, you know, would consider about that. But given where the series goes in terms of cloning, that's also something that, you know, people definitely need to consider. It's wild, man. Like, it's absolutely wild to think about where technology could possibly go if we chose to force that. But here's the thing. I'm really glad that we're not doing that, and most of the companies are just corporate interests that are taking our DNA.
I mean, that's what you think. You say that's better, but, like, it's still really... It's still really sketchy. Like, I wouldn't even test it just to see.
True. Like,
well, I don't know.
You guys don't want personalized. You don't want personalized streaming service profiles based on your genetic material.
It's bad enough that they figure out what mind. I want from what I Google. Yeah, like I don't need them to know all that.
These are my jokes, folks. I love my jokes. But as Angela is walking outside, because first of all, she
did we want to talk at all about the letter?
She doesn't get, the letter happens back before she gets to the center, but the letter is really important, and she didn't want to burn it towards the end.
She thought about it, because she knew she had to get rid of the evidence, but then she didn't want to, but then Did she pocket the pieces of it afterwards?
No, I don't think we saw any of that. She just stomped it out.
That could lead to something, but we'll see what happens. But she didn't. She paused for a moment and then burned it by accident, which I thought, because the phone rang, which I thought was interesting. And I think all that's left of it at that point is just this boy.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if this is significance, but I'm just saying it's there. We should know. What did you think of the symbol for the tree, or the symbol for the genetics center? It was a lot of Dr. Manhattan type symbols in a tree.
I don't remember.
Yeah, it was like a tree, but there were circles in it, and so, and I guess it's kind of like, oh, you've got a hit over here, but to me, the circles, because the Dr. Manhattan symbol is the helium atom, and is it helium or hydrogen?
Hydrogen.
Yeah. All right, Dr. Manhattan's the symbol of hydrogen atom. I've been playing too much Minecraft Education Edition. So it's the hydrogen. So Dr. Manhattan's symbol is the hydrogen atom, and it did kind of evoke that for me, although I don't know if that's intended.
I don't know. Every time I think of trees, just in general, for some reason, I always think of veins in the body, because human veins may not look entirely like trees, but they still look like trees to me. So whenever there's tree symbolism, I just immediately think of veins and kind of tie that all together. But that's just me. So she leaves the center and she runs into...
I do want to mention about this particular she leaves the center part. So I know 100% that they filmed that here, because I was literally in that same place yesterday. There's a Starbucks right there that I always go to. So that 100% was in Decatur Square, Atlanta area, Georgia. So
Decatur Square, Atlanta area in Georgia, you guys. That's cool. That's
you
so
can
cool.
see you can see the word square in one of the pictures.
Oh, I didn't even see it.
Picture I'm looking at right now. So maybe.
Yeah, I definitely recognize like the blue like things on the side and the pattern on the ground, and like where that car fell. I was like, oh my god, that's it. That was literally it.
That's awesome.
What is it? What is it normally?
There's usually actually like a cop car parked there. I don't know why. Most of it kind of looks like that.
is it like a mall or something?
No, it's just like a little outdoor like courtyard kind of thing. It's what's underneath it is the train station for a subway, the MARTA station. So like it like they just have that platform at the top part, but if you were to walk like all the way around, like kind of further down and then go like make a turn, you'd get to the MARTA station. And MARTA stands for Metro Atlanta Regional Transit or something like that. but it's just like an empty courtyard thing where it has like a weird fountain, and you can kind of see it in the shot of the show. I don't know if they changed it up a little bit or not, but like you can see it like when she's like walking to the car, and I don't know, it's just kind of weird. I think they move like the trash cans and stuff. I guess maybe walking have a more sophisticated way of throwing your trash and recyclables away, but I think there's like the old courthouse that's over there too. I think it was a courthouse. My cousin got married in it too, so I should know. But I was there yesterday.
Nice.
So, pardon everybody for me jumping out of sequence and missing the smaller details. I do apologize. I was just really excited to get back to so Vanessa gave them a ship name. Vanessa, what's their ship name?
Oh, Langella. I was like, but I'm open to alternatives. There's also Agent Knight, which I also think is really cool, like a cool like 80s noir detective show kind of thing. Like I'm open to suggestions, so definitely tweet us if you have other things, but I'm feeling Langella right now. I'm feeling them, I'm feeling their vibe, I'm feeling this enemies to lovers thing. I'm feeling it, guys. The chemistry, the energy. They're just so good together. It's fine.
They we can still have Pokemon fandom call it rival shipping.
Yeah. I think every ship has that. Well, I don't know. You know, when we talked about her being Angela's Commissioner Gordon, I don't know if there's ever Batman and Commissioner Gordon fanfic, but now that I've spoken.
Oh, yeah.
Tony's like, oh, yeah. If you watch Teen Titans Go. It's in Teen Titans Go. No subtext, all text.
Are you serious? That's terrible.
Wait a minute.
And Superman is jealous.
It's a kids' movie. What's happening?
There's a lot of sleepovers.
Oh, wow.
And, arm around the shoulder. And
love it. I love that for me.
Yeah, and Superman keeps wanting to do things with Batman, but he's already doing things with Commissioner Gordon. So it's very put out. That's or cute. Sad.
That's really cute. Really, really cute. I need this. I need to watch. I didn't actually watch Teen Titans Go, and now I'm probably going to rent this as soon as we're done recording.
Yeah, that's it, right? No, yeah.
I think it's in the movie a little bit. I mean, like, it's in the show pretty repeatedly when they feature Batman and Commissioner Gordon.
Anyway. So, Angela.
Yeah.
Yes. So she's like, Angela's badass. So Lori's like, oh, this is hysterical. And Angela's just like, click, click. She's like, of course it's your car.
Right? The whole sequence is so funny to me because, like, they're just, everything is in body language. They don't even have to talk sometimes. Yeah. Like, it's just like in looks and, like, they're just so, and, fucking Lori's so damn tall. So this also feeds into another one of my ship tropes, guys. Height difference. Oh my god! Angela's so tiny and Lori's so tall. I'm like loving it so much. Like their energy, like Angela has big like Napoleon complex. Like, what the fuck? I'll still fight you. I'm 4'11. I don't care. Like, I love it so much. And like everything is like, even subtext is so, they're just so at odds with each other, but they have this like really cool respect for each other because they know that. They know that they know each other's shit and they keep trying to one up each other the whole episode. It's so fucking hilarious.
I'm gonna ask a dumb, I don't know anything about cars question. What does she do when she like turn the alarm off? By the wheel?
There's usually an emergency.
Oh, somewhere. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
For stuff like that. It's the same as like if you can't get your trunk open or if you lose the key to your trunk, usually in some cars they will put like little switches in hidden places so that you can get into the trunk. I can only assume that it was the same in this case because that car was completely wrecked.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I do want to point out.
Nothing. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I wanted to point out Vanessa. I was watching Angela walk and Vanessa pointed out that whenever Angela is dressed as Sister Knight, she has a completely different vibe, and I really noticed that in this episode. Like, Lori is completely comfortable with herself, and she's just but Sister Knight is walking like she owns everything, and she's, like, got this balance of, it was just incredible to watch.
Guys, like, peacock around other guys and, like, puff out their chests a little bit? That's, like, totally what was going on in that scene. Like, she puffing out her chest.
Was in the bottle?
Those pills.
So there's the only thing different that nothing was other than the car being totally wrecked. There was nothing really missing from the car. I don't think she kept anything in the car anyways. But in the glove box, the only thing in the glove box, which who is that the only thing? I guess it's a cop car, so you don't have to have your registration with you. The only thing, was it the cop car? I'm not even sure.
The civilian car.
But she had nothing except for the bottle of pills, which I'm sure you were just supposed to see the bottle of pills. But I have so many theories about what these pills are. I want to hear what you guys think first.
I don't like anything from like supplementals to super pills. Like I have a note here. Like I literally was like, are these super pills? I don't know. Was that where how he like has been? I don't know. Was that how he like gets to be tough? I have no idea.
It's a comic trope.
Yeah, but isn't there like a guy in the JSA? I forgot. Like Steel or something.
Hourman. Yeah, that's the one. He would take a pill for an hour. He would have.
Yeah. Oh wait,
they kind of changed that because, you know, Saint on the drugs, but but that's the way it used to be, at least. I think it has been in revivals, you know, more recently. But he would have 1 hour to do whatever he wanted because he would have superpowers for an hour. But I mean, they used this on Jessica Jones recently, with superhero pills. Yeah,
with Patsy Walker when she was taking pills to.
Have
super strength, and it's the same trope with Nuke. I'm gonna put out that they're placebos, and he just wanted her to go looking for True.
I have more interesting theory. My theory, I don't know if I should save it for later, and I'll tell it, and you guys can tell me if I'm totally spoiling the rest of the episode. But everybody's seen it anyways. Is that they are memories? That there is something that they extracted from the genetic experiments with the psychic squid, and that because there's an IV drip in the very end of the episode that may or may not be giving memories. I think maybe this, and she said this, you're just doing the same thing. Do we think it's literally, you know, just a kind of, hey, you need to figure out what these are so you can know I'm Hooded Justice, or do we think it's actually memories that if she takes it, she'll have his memories of Hooded Justice?
Ooh.
I want to answer that at the end, I think.
Okay, we'll talk at the end.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to give my guess.
I don't know.
Well, I wouldn't guess. My guess was that it's actually not super pills, but like power dampening pills. Because it looks like he's pretty strong whenever he's not, like when he wasn't taking them, I guess. Like, because if he left them in the car, I mean, literally True could just make some more, I'm guessing. But he didn't have them, so I wonder if it's just kind of he uses them so he can appear to be weak and dilapidated or whatever, but he's actually really strong and stuff.
Wow.
Okay, so more Cal being the absolute bestest.
What's up with this dude? He's
sleeping in bed with the two kids.
We're talking about that one's cute. I don't know, I'm on full like side eye mode with Cal at this point.
Yeah,
he's too good.
Everything he does is suspicious. Oh, he's being a good father. Oh, I wonder why. Like, I'm so suspicious of him at this point. I think he can do,
but I'm totally
is right.
I never did this before, but now I'm totally gonna do it. Is that like next time one of the kids goes to sleep in the big bed because they had a nightmare or whatever, I'm totally going into the big bed because
That's such a good idea.
But can
Can we talk about Topher and Angela? Because I love their relationship.
Their relationship so good.
Regarding Batman Topher, I'm very suspicious of Topher at this point. Not that he's up to something. No, because okay. Remember when he was building that Manhattan Castle thing?
Yep.
And now in this episode, he's in a room full of space stuff, and it's like blue
with Bobastis.
He's too smart.
If we're riding into the theory that maybe Topher is super enhanced in some way, and it's tapping into something like a high frequency antenna type thing.
Was the puzzle that they put out. So remember, Vite in the original comic was doing a lot of stuff in the media to kind of get people ready for the big psychic attack. This
also true.
So they giving people obviously people were watching the castle on Mars because the whole series started out with, you know, Dr. Manhattan, the video of Dr. Manhattan destroying the castle. So it's popular, and it was a Dr. Manhattan themed magnetic building set. So I don't think that is a sign that he's channeling anything. That was what he was supposed to build with that kit.
Here's the thing about Topher. I think people are right to be like Topher is going to do something, but I really think that if something happens to Angela, which I don't want to happen, or if something happens to Cal or to one of his sisters, then Topher is going to be baby vigilante.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way that Topher and Angela, because Angela does not beat around the bush with the kid, and Angela is very upfront, and Angela is the same. Like when
he's her Jason Todd, like he literally said to
exactly.
He told her what he told us what he was like in the beginning. Like he's like, I wanted to punch him because you wanted to fight him. Like literally, like he's right on site. Like let's go. Like you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like
That hurts to think about.
I know it does. It hurts me too.
Not that bad. It's just the Lazarus pit that got him going.
All right, let's not get into Jason. So I think the thing is that Cal and the girls live somewhat on a normal level. I know Cal. See, this is the thing, though, is Cal has been through that trauma as well. And he's obviously been through more trauma that we haven't talked about yet. But it still seems like they seem like the normal. And the other two are very, like, they're in their trauma. Like, they're living in their trauma. They experience it on a different level. Like, all five of them experienced the same traumas. But it was internalized differently by those two because they feel like they're responsible, like we should have taken care of everyone. And they identify with each other on that level. Mm-hmm. But I got to talk about Bubastis, guys, because what this means, this is his lovey. His lovey is Adrian, is a plushie of Adrian's white cat that he incinerated, which means that Adrian, that regardless of what happened with the journal, when Topher was three, Adrian Veidt was still a pop culture hero or a pop culture icon, that his pet was still a stuffed animal that was sold.
I just want to point out, remember, I asked for a stuffed Bubastis. HBO did give me one. HBO delivered. Is it a real one that I can own and love? No, sadly. But perhaps one day.
You don't know that yet. Maybe I should go to
someone on Etsy's gonna make it.
I think I'm gonna be honest. I think the priority for some retailers is gonna be a certain other toy.
Oh well,
that's gonna be really expensive though.
Not for kids.
Okay, since we're talking about Cal though, and we jump into the next scene where they're cooking with eggs, and Angela is kind of filling him in a little bit. I want to point out that Cal is handling Angela. Cal hands Angela all of the power, just like Obi did in Greenwood. So the movie is constantly putting the power, or the movie, the TV show is constantly putting the power in the hands of the black women of the series, and I really like that. Like
it's Angela, right?
But it's
true.
But no, they pass that on. So I was like, "Oh, this."
No, I agree. I think I've always seen the parallels between them and Obi and I think Ruth Robeson. Yeah, and so I actually loved her answer when he was like, "Why?" And she was like, "Because I'm not acting rationally right now," which is hilarious because okay, and he just is like, "Okay, whatever." Like, well, okay, that's not an answer, Angela. And I just thought that was hilarious. Like, whatever. Let's move on.
I do want to talk about how suspicious it is that they put so much, but the writers and everything, they put so much focus on her giving him all these recaps.
Yeah.
Like he's totally telling somebody all this for some reason.
Yeah, he's very non-threatening and he just receives it. But yeah, I don't know. There's other wrinkles in here too. But he is very quiet and he doesn't get, nothing seems to frazzle him. Like, have you seen him? He makes one face when the bomb's going off, and that was in previously on, where you can see his face go kind of a little bit. But in general, he's just he's like her. He keeps her on an even keel, right? Like, she's like super, and she goes home, and he's like this calming ocean. Now, whether or not that is something suspicious or not, you know, we can definitely talk about, but
if it was just supportive, I wouldn't think of it. But the fact that they keep, like, it's been every episode now.
Yeah, he's being written like how I hate a lot of women are written on typical shows. Like, you know, they're just like there to spout supportive platitudes to their man, and they're like, "You go, you're great," and like, or they're just there to like be there for the kids. Like, he's being written specifically this way for a reason. Like,
it's not true.
Yeah, and they keep pointing out that he's gorgeous and like he's perfect. Like, there's something off, and then we get this. Go ahead.
What you're gonna say, I think, is this what he tells the kids over the breakfast
table. Yeah, that was fucking weird, man. Okay, the girls, like, grieve. They're clearly grieving. Like, let them have the heaven thing for a second. Like, I get the, like, okay, like, but I feel like I never grew up believing in, like, Santa Claus or anything, but, like, there's a certain age, and even I knew, like, I went to elementary school, and I remember being told by my parents, like, don't, these kids believe in Santa Claus, don't say anything to the other kids, they believe in it, and I was just like, okay, whatever, I don't care. But it's, like, a thing, like, you just get, there gets to a certain age, they get to it, they'll get to that eventually, but, like, homegirl is, like, what, 3, 4? Like, she has to process this in her own way, and I feel like kids fight, and they fight, and they do that, but his very deadpan, like, nothing, like, it was just so weird, and especially in this form, coming from, like, a Black dude, a Black man, Black people are always historically shown as being very, you know, spiritual, religious, so it was extra sharp for me. I was like, damn, to show a Black man being so openly, casually atheist. I was like, okay. And then to these she's kids were just yeah it was shocked. She was just kind of like, okay. It was just very odd, and I'm curious as to what you guys thought about it, because I just was so put off. I mean, not put off, I was just very thrown off by it.
I tweeted about it, because I don't think I've ever seen, not for the same reasons, obviously, but I don't think I've ever seen atheism portrayed so bluntly. I mean, most people, okay, I do believe in God, but one of the things that I don't believe is very godly is the Christian film industry, because most of the Christian film industry tends to treat people as very othering, and most of it relies on these really outdated tropes, and a lot of it is just really creepy and terrible. But whenever they portray atheists, they're usually very angry people, mm-hmm. and, you know, and they don't really subscribe to that particular belief. This is, I think, the first time I've ever seen in media, and again, I don't watch shows that normally discuss this, but this is the first time I think I've ever seen in media where people were, the character was bluntly like, this is what I believe as an atheist. And it's like, he didn't say as an atheist, but he was like, this is what I believe. And it was so blunt, and it wasn't angry. And I'm very used to, and again, it's not because I watch a lot of these movies, but I tend to watch deconstructions of them, where it's like talking about how, you know, none of these are really decent portrayals of biblical works and such. And just most of those tend to depict people who are atheists as like, you know, I don't like God because God betrayed me and blah, blah, blah. And this guy was like, no, none of that exists. Which made me wonder, is Cal a clone?
What?
Like, you gotta explain this train of thought.
I see where they're coming from. I see where they're coming from. Because, like, the thing is, like, Carolyn makes a good point. I watch a lot of things where there are people who are like, I don't believe in God. And they're always coming from a frame of like, it's because they lost someone, or like someone died of cancer, or they lost a limb. It's always coming from a place of pain, and like they're always angry. This was, the specific scene was very unique. But here's the thing. I get where they're coming from, because that's what I said in the chat. I said, Kyle's a bot. Because there's a very lack of there's a specific, but I'm saying, like, it's a very similar, there's a specific, we've seen the clones we have seen are moving through the motions. They're there to serve.
Let's be very clear about what, so I think the show, we use the term clone a lot because we don't know what to call them.
Right.
But a clone is simply a
child. Life model decoy.
So let's be careful here, is that we're not saying that he is simply a genetically
non-human
being. He's not a split. He's not a split stem cell baby.
No. But I might be able. I'm about to blow your mind, y'all. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
They talk about how Cal had an accident, and I'm sure Wendy and everybody has a lot of theories about this accident. What I want to know is if Cal was in Vietnam and Lady True was in Vietnam, does Lady True have something to do with the fact that Cal survived his accident?
Oh, we have so much to talk about here. Do we want to do this now, or should we wait?
Because if that's the case, what if he died? And this is bringing him back as something that doesn't believe it. And there's evidence to support this too, because later in the episode, when we are introduced to the clones, you have, Veidt straight up says, he says, in order for you to truly be alive, you have to have purpose, and neither, your only purpose is to serve.
Mm-hmm.
And the concept of being like, feeling purposeless would truly probably make you believe that there's nothing out there unless you manage to define purpose for yourself. So it's like, why
are you saying he got into an injury that took away his career and made him feel purposeless? Or are you saying that someone, so I want to be careful in saying that someone whose genetics have been altered or whoever is like trying, I think where you're going, which scares me, is trying to say the clones have no soul.
I don't personally believe that. I mean, if anything, I saw The Island with Ewan McGregor, and that
I would say The Island.
But and that proves that at least
they're just if they're actually clones, they're just
we don't know what they are. We're essentially guessing. It could be android, a bot, it could be clone, it could be anything. We're just
it could be design or something.
I think we've seen evidence of these beings, these hosts, or whatever Westworld terminology, but that they are created, they're organically created, and they're evolved, and they still have they move about without purpose. They're not like us, so they're something else other than us. So I get where I think that we have to at least acknowledge that they may be two or three
different things, because I think because if I'm correct in my assumptions, we have seen at least three people who are clones, who I believe are people clones. I don't think it's the same thing that's going on with Vite. Were designed to very, I mean, that, you know, you suddenly have all your memories when you, as you develop in a microwave.
I don't agree that the technology is that different. Like, how many different types of ways can you create life? Like, besides the way it's Dr. Manhattan way and then growing him in a lab or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, if Dr. Manhattan made them from atoms, that may be more complicated, but I would think that he would be able to, DNA wouldn't be too complicated for him to understand.
Right. Well,
I don't know what's going on with that. That may not be real at all. Is another thing that we have to explore.
And we're also neglecting the most important factor in any sense of purpose for any creature, for any living creature, which is frequently, you know, forgotten, which is the nurture side of it. You know, if these clones are treated, you know, if these beings, I'm going to call them, you know, can we all agree collectively before I continue my little tirade here? Can we all agree to call them hosts? Like Westworld hosts until we know what they are.
I think there's different levels here. we don't know what they are. And I'm worried that if we give them an exact allegory to something else, we'll start assuming that. And then
I want to call.
We already kind of started in with the clone thing.
Crookshanks ones. Yeah. I want to call them clones because they do appear to be clones of at least of each other.
Yes.
You know. Yeah, okay. Yeah,
there's people who have used a lot of. Artificial reproductive technology that's not cloning yet, but ethically, I think we need to just be careful because that's a real thing.
Let's compromise then and forget what I said. We'll just address it each individually because that's what we should do. And instead, I will point out that naturally there is the nurture aspect that I think a lot of people tend to ignore. The concept of life for human beings is such a sacred idea, and it truly is. I'm not dismissing that at all. In seeing it as such a sacred concept, however, most people forget that there is the input of the parent and society and everything else. And so Cal, by being the way that he is, clearly has enough, and that again differentiates people, you said, because Cal knows who he is. He just has no sense of purpose, which could even be attributed truthfully to the fact that
I have to say that, and I don't like where you're going with this. It's by saying a man who stays at home with the kids doesn't have a sense of purpose, and that
I don't know if that's why they're saying that. I think we have evidence that there's like he's got no emotion, even in their fights, when she's literally saying, "I'm trying to pick a fight with you," there's nothing. He's like, "There's just nothing. Everything's a recap." There's not just a man staying at home with his family. It's. I think it's just more about literally, we have no personality. We have nothing. We have nothing out of this man. We've been on four episodes, and now we've given two lines and know exactly who Pirate Jenny is. Like, this is what I'm saying. Like, I think it's on purpose. But anyway, Carolyn can explain.
No. Yeah, no, Vanessa's 100% correct. It's definitely a focus that people are feeling. And it's not, again, about actions. I just believe that when you're I get, okay, I'll lean into the Manhattan example to keep it short and sweet, okay? If something like Manhattan exists and happens, that's enough to shake the foundation of every piece of reality. There's a comic book by Mark Waid called Irredeemable, and then there's another one called Incorruptible. And Irredeemable, in short, is about a world where Superman just finally says, fuck it all. Sorry. Cut that. Superman says, screw it all.
No, and wait. After last episode, now we're going to be... No.
I've been cussing the whole time.
Okay, so Superman says, fuck it all. And he just goes full Superman bananas, and he is just like blowing things up, and he's tossing the planet around, and all this stuff happens, it happens, it happens. But the event is so profound that his arch nemesis, who is this guy named, I want to say his name is Max Steel, but that's not right. I don't remember his name. He's one of my favorite comic characters. His arch nemesis is this truly evil person. Like, he has a 16-year-old girlfriend. He stole all this money. He has a car that's like, he's stolen all these things. He has superpowers. He drinks. He's your typical villain. And he sees Superman going crazy. This is not Superman, because he's not Superman. He sees Superman going crazy. He leaves everybody alone for 3 days. And when he comes back, he's like, I have to turn my life around and be a hero. And his 16-year-old girlfriend is like, well, no, but you're supposed to want to sleep with me and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, no, I'm not going to sleep with you ever again. I'm not going to sleep with you until you turn 18. What I did.
Isn't this Megamind?
Okay.
But no, Megamind was a nice dude.
The bad guy shows up and he can no longer be the bad guy anymore. He has to be the good guy to the bad guy that he created.
Right. But there is if you assume that people like Cal have no power when confronted with something like Manhattan, there's just nothing that you can do.
So I get it.
Yeah, okay. So
I'm going to say, though, I think we can, there may be a huge explanation, but I think, you know, if he has definitely gone through some kind of serious friggin' trauma, and I think that is enough to make you see the world in a very flat. I think, you know, we have to be, you know, honest with people, you know, listening, who have been through serious trauma and just have that problem that is very real, that you just, it becomes very hard. You know, and I'm not saying that your religion goes away, but I think, you know, he may have seen something very stark. But I do agree that Dr. Manhattan saying there's the same number of atoms in a dead person as a live person, you know, does kind of do that to you as well.
That kind of shaped reality for dozens of comic book fans in the 80s and the 90s, Lord knows. Anyway, but so then we get into the scenes I'm really excited about discussing, which are Looking Glass and Angela, wants to kick us off.
His weird little bunker!
I love it.
Oh, no, he's still gonna die.
No! Okay, yeah, like, so
right. But it's like off a house, right? There's a house there.
Yeah, he's like checking off all these like fundamentalist like wacky boxes, but he's somehow like so likable and weirdly relatable. He's like showing empathy for the little baby squids. Like, it's just like, what is this dude's story? Like, I am so curious.
I think we'll find out next week. Yeah,
I know. I can't wait.
All of it. He's
which means he's probably gonna die at the end of the next episode.
No.
I know.
He is such a stereotype that it's pushed him all the way. Like, I will bet you he voted for Redford. I will bet you money. Like, he's been pushed. He's such a stereotype as a redneck, and then they pushed him all the way to this other side where he's like, you know, he's doing the thing with the empathy for the squids, and he's, like, talking about his ex, and he's, like, listening to what Angela says. What did everybody make of the Klan costume thing? Because I did not know how to read that at all.
He was very matter of fact, like, you know.
Yeah, like nonplussed.
He was like, yeah, he's a white man in Oklahoma, no shit. And I was like, oh, okay.
I thought that was very good.
And she's like, yeah, I guess you, okay, well, damn. Like, that was the second time Angela just kind of went like, all right, cool. Like, it was, yeah, that was,
He instinctively tried to say, well, maybe he just kept it. And I like, and then I think they were both like, yeah, you don't just keep
yeah, they were like trying to give him the benefit of the doubt, but they both end that. And I'm glad that they like took, they knocked that one out. Like, nah, yeah. No one just keeps it as a keepsake. Like, no.
No.
In a special thing in the secret.
Yeah, like in a bus, like as a, like in a shrine type thing. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, they, yeah.
And then his ex-wife, who works in pharmacology.
Did they say wife, or did they just? I know
they just said ex. Yeah, they just said ex. I don't know if we know if it's a wife or not, but
please be gay. Please be gay. Please be gay. Please be gay. Please be gay.
I'm looking. I'm looking.
They did say she.
Oh, they did.
Okay. 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 Yeah, I'm curious about the ex as well. Like, I'm betting that we'll probably meet her. In the next episode, I'm assuming, because it's his backstory. And did anyone? Am I crazy, or did his hair longer than I thought it was? I don't know. That was a side note. Never mind.
Well, he's in his element now, so he's much more. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought he was like one of those balding type dudes, but he's also giving me Matthew McConaughey in True Detective. Y'all, give me that. I'm loving it.
Has everybody watched True Detective?
No, but go on.
The first season was just Lovecraft.
Phenomenal. Yes.
And you're like, so they're going there.
Yeah. They're really invoking a little bit of it. Yeah.
It was so good. It was so a Lovecraft role-playing game.
Yeah, like the time of the flat circle, like it ties in with the TikTok thing. Yeah.
HBO has been doing a lot of callbacks, actually, to previous stuff that it's done, because I was watching His Dark Materials, because we record this on Monday night, and there's a scene in it where one of the characters mentions one of the few good lines in Game of Thrones, where the character's like, ah, you know, but it's a shame that when you give a compliment, it always ends with a but. And there's a line in the first season of Game of Thrones that I've never forgotten, where one of the characters says, careful, my brother says that when you say something, but it ends with the word but, everything that comes before the word but is automatically made untrue. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So HBO is doing a lot of callbacks to other material that it's created, which I think is kind of cool. But then, so we've talked to Looking Glass, and it is time for me to share. So I was, Angela's walking down the street, and she's walking down the thing, and I literally said the fuck the same time she
did. It was very proud. Silver Lubin, he is the hero that we need today. Like, what the fuck, you guys?
Sorry. Can I just say, is there anybody here who does not think it's Petey?
I don't know. I think it's Petey. Like his little scrawny ass. Like, bro, come on.
I did think he needs like a gadget belt or something. Because like I would think like in that situation, Batman would like throw the thing to like tie their feet up. But she doesn't have anything like that.
He just has oil.
He can just escape. That's all he.
I can't. I watched it again earlier while I was eating lunch and I almost choked on my taco, y'all. I'm fucking crying. The look on her face. Her whole face is basically covered, and you can just tell Regina King is an actress because her eyes portrayed the exact moment we all were like, what am I watching right now? It was beautiful, man, and she deserves an Emmy for that. Anyway.
I was gonna say when they give him the name Loop Man later in the episode. My first thought was just that 90s promo where it says this is HBO and then that blum.
This is the golden age of television, y'all.
I don't want to sell Angela short, though. That was a piece of brilliance to know exactly when the trucks go by to bring the stuff into the and so, I mean, it's going right in to get burned, and then nobody will know, except now somebody's been watching her.
Yeah, what the fuck? Yeah, and I obviously, I don't think anyone's supposed to doubt that it's Petey, but I do love that, you know, she's chasing him. I love the chase sequence, and I think everyone was expecting her to catch this weird dude.
I want Petey to be, like, Jimmy Olsen, and, like, show up in a different... a different outfit or a different superhero.
Oh my god!
Persona every episode.
That would be fucking hilarious. I would support that. God, he's so funny. Jesus Christ!
Do you think Lori sent him out to watch her?
I'm gonna. Yeah, I would bet money that he's doing this on his own. She would never approve. I know he's doing. If it's him, he's doing it on his own. Like he's just that. He feels like that kind of goober, you know.
I think he does it at home, so there's no way that nobody is that flexible and just decides to put it on for
fun. Oh, yeah. Agreed. Yeah, he's been doing this for a while, too. Yeah.
He's just like swoop it. I'm like, what the fuck?
God. And then, yeah, like, I just, God, that was, yeah, it was great. Silver Lube Man.
All hail Lube Man, the hero we all really need. Anyway, so we go down into the, we go back to the precinct, and that's when we see Senator Keene again, and Senator Keene was definitely threatening Angela.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was very uncomfortable and inappropriate. Mm-hmm.
I think that was the first time I've noticed her being small. I think this is the first time, actually, and I think this is probably on purpose, on the purpose of the camera or the director or whatever, that I've actually noticed that Angela's short. Because framed against Lori earlier and then Keene, like, they tower over her in a very threatening kind of way. And she always kind of just is like, what, like, she makes up for it in, like, you know, the way she, her body language. But this is the first time I've noticed how tiny she is. And, like, he just kind of, like, he's obviously threatening her with his body language stuff. And he tries to tell his dudes to back off. Like, bro, like, she wouldn't take you and all those dudes out. Anyway, sorry, I get really defensive of
her. As you should. As you should.
But, yeah, no, that was, I thought that was interesting. Like, he obviously, like, I feel like everyone tries to make it a point, like, I have this power over you. I know your name. Okay. That's also disrespectful and dangerous because, like, literally people died because people knew their name. So I feel like that's such a weird thing. Law. Yeah, right? Like, you made a good point. What the fuck? I'm even more mad.
He's just a jerk.
Yeah,
he's but, I mean, besides being a villain, but...
Yeah.
I love the scene with the vigilantes because it looks just like something out of Law and Order, but they're all dressed in costumes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It was like a weird Comic-Con moment where, like,
you're posing. It was really good. Yeah.
You're posing for some pictures or whatever, and they're like, oh, okay, act like Law and Order. And it's just the most random thing.
I noticed, every episode I noticed more of Pirate Jenny's, like, more of details of Pirate Jenny's look, like the skull on the side of her jacket. Like, she, I don't know if she changes ever so, or just noticing different pieces of it, but, like, I love the repeated pirate references, like pirate novels, pirate romance novels, pirate TV shows, and then her as her whole look. And I guess it's because of the whole psychic squid attack written by that person, but the whole pirate permeation in society, in this particular society, is so fascinatingly weird to me.
Can we do a quick recap of the origin of Pirate Jenny, where the story comes from?
Yeah.
So the song which we went over in, like, I think it was the episode before the first episode of the season, mm-hmm. is about something coming, right? So they basically, Pirate Jenny is a maid working in town that everybody looks down on and spits on. And it was actually Nina Simone sang it. When she sang it, she made it a Black woman in the South who was getting mistreated as she worked as a maid. And then we find out she's really a pirate queen, and the ship shows up and they kill everybody in town. But it's, again, this is a bit foreboding. I keep coming back to, there's a Black freighter going to show up and kill everybody, which kind of is what happened in Watchmen with the references to the Black freighter. And I'm kind of scared about, you know, is there a really big reason why we can't have a season two? Maybe no more Earth. I don't know.
But... Doomsday was in the was in the meteor.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh no! And no Superman.
We're getting all these Superman allegories. That's the first thing I thought of. I was like, Doomsday.
Me too, a bit. But yeah. So that, I mean, so that's what we're waiting on right now. Is we're waiting on the Black Freighter. And again, the hotel. The motel is called the Black Freighter. So there's all kinds of, and we'll talk about, I want to talk a little bit more about the Black Freighter when we get to Bite's Bit.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, there's a Black Freighter coming into harbor. So.
Yeah. So then we get, the whole, basically they're like, we can't deal with, you know, saucy lube man because we have to stick with, you know, the Seventh Cavalry. So Lori's taken over, yeah, as chief, and they have another
batteries. I forgot about the batteries. Even with the batteries, go. We don't know what's going on with the batteries.
Here's the batteries and the cabbage. Here's my question, because they mentioned batteries and they mentioned cabbage. I still don't know what the cabbage is for.
No, lettuce. The lettuce is from the shooting, the original shooting. Remember?
Yeah,
he threw the lettuce in the thing.
Mm-hmm. I think it was just like a joke in reference to it. I don't think it. we know, like, specifically what it's for or anything yet. Lettuce was involved.
Yeah, they were just making references to, like, all the clues, basically, like the battery things from, like, the first episode and the lettuce from the first episode.
Yeah.
Doesn't really have any other.
How did Corey know that the guy was in a wheelchair?
Because remember she said in the third episode that they found tracks at the site, and Angela asked what vehicle it was, and she said, "Oh, I didn't say it was a vehicle. They were wheelchair."
Oh, okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. I missed that.
And they actually showed the tracks when Lori goes.
Yeah, watching. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. See you looking at it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I thought that whole scene was great because, like, she finds out that her grandfather was a cop like her. Do we agree or not if he was the original Hooded Justice?
I agree.
I think that's implied. That's definitely implied.
Yeah.
I mean, they could be leading us down the wrong track, but when she says, you know, if you want to tell her who you really are, you should just come out and tell her. I'm assuming the pills are the clue that will put all of the pieces together.
So when we think about, if we agree that he is Hooded Justice, the OG Hooded Justice, that means that changes everything that we assumed we know about the OG Hooded Justice in the Minutemen, his relationship with Sally Jupiter.
But it was always kind of, we're not sure that was the guy, right?
But that's what I'm saying. Like, our assumptions have become kind of, that's what PD has been railing over, you know, over on PDpedia, is that these kind of assumptions have become sort of assumed fact because we just, like, we don't know much about him. So yeah, we guess we assume he's homosexual. He's this and that, you know what I'm saying? So we don't know.
But that was the speech in American Hero Story was, you think I'm this, 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 and this, but I'm here to tell you who I really am.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Even
the body, like, they flat out said that the body wasn't him. So I know Peter railed against it, but it's exactly what he said.
No, I'm not talking about the show. I'm talking about I'm talking about considering him, I'm not talking about the American Hero Story. I'm talking about Will Reeves. If we are assuming Will Reeves was the original Hooded Justice, how do we feel that that changes the original Watchmen story? Like,
I think
from what we've known about.
It, like, puts, you know, Mueller in an interesting position because Mueller, and they've shown that Mueller was in World War II with the Nazi thing. Wasn't it Herr Mueller was the woman?
There was three Muellers. So there was the Mueller that was the woman. There was the Mueller who was Reeves' father's, who was Judd's father's commanding officer, I believe, that was in the newspaper story.
Okay.
Was also a Mueller, and that would have been what, World War II or the Korean War? I think it must have been World War II. I'd have to go back and read it. So there's a Mueller there, and then there's a Mueller who was Hooded Justice. So again,
extra Muellers, then, you know, wouldn't the fact that there's multiple ones imply that there was a little bit of a red herring and there's only one true dude? So I think that kind of proves that this guy was Hooded Justice. And initially when I said that, my theory was, okay, if he killed Mueller and it was the Nazi Mueller, that would make sense. And especially with Jordan Peele's new series coming out where it's like 1970s Nazi hunters. And if this guy was a cop in the 70s, that would make even more sense.
40s,
50s. I feel like he killed him, though. He killed him to discover his trail. No. Everybody suspected this guy, and they were on to him. And if they found out that he wasn't him, they would have. I think it was more of a. I mean, we'll find out, but I feel like it's more like a covering his trail kind of thing, because he needed to get out. And I always felt this from the old Watchmen, anyways. I felt that the real Hooded Justice killed this guy so that people would stop looking for him and think he was dead. But that's just, that's an old theory for like 35 years. It's not necessarily anything to do with the show. Okay, where were we? All right, so we think he's Hooded Justice. Okay, the driving in the car and the masks.
Petey.
Oh, Petey. That show is garbage. He's such a fanboy. Oh my God. He literally is like, he's literally like, every time I see someone like tweet about, oh, the CW show prepares for crisis, and they're so like 15 DC fanboys like shitting, people so also CW shows there, it's a terrible, and I'm like, oh my god, you're Petey, chill out, go outside.
Is Petey demanding to release the true Watchmen cut? It's 5 hours long,
right? Coincidentally, also made by Snyder. Oh Jesus!
Hey. He exists in every universe. Snyder's Dr.
Good Manhattan. Lord! Oh my God! God, all right, guys, we're living in the Snyderverse. That's all. Oh, we're just—it's just the Snyderverse, and that honestly tracks with our reality. Anyway, I got dark.
Thermodynamic miracle.
Yeah, thermodynamic. Yes. Great. Yeah.
Wendy, you had something to say about that.
About which one?
Thermodynamic miracles.
Oh yeah, no, I shared it. So this is a thermodynamic miracle. So there's a lot of stuff that they're showing you that appears to be very coincidental. Which I they're using that term thermodynamic miracle, but I don't think so. Just like I don't think Lori was either. But that's what got Dr. Manhattan to come back fine. But it's this idea that, yeah, that kind of idea that there's kismet, right? That there's coincidence. But I think that's what Lady True wants you to believe. And I think that either Lady True or someone else is really organizing the big picture and all of these things that appear to be. And I think Lori knows that too. I don't think Lori's fooled by any of that. I think. All these things that appear to be happy circumstances, you know, just happen to be this, just happen to be that, really are designed. But that is, I will post that frame that this all comes from on the blog. Yeah, so we get to, and I was happy that the scientist they're talking with was a woman, and I get the feeling that there are a lot of women working for Lady True inside the hovercraft carrier bay. So these are all kind of like drones, like hover drones, but like giant sized crane hover drones that they're using to build the Millennium Clock, which obviously was what dropped the car off.
There was a line that one of the characters said, and it kind of made me laugh because I would swear on my mother that they were like, it, when they were in the thing, were like, it's all connected. And I was like, is that a Marvel reference? What? I keep looking for Marvel references in this DC show and I hate myself. But the song that was playing in the back of the car before we get to the
oh, one,
it's You're My Thrill by Billie Holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And the lyrics to You're My Thrill, since they always have a meaning, I didn't think to look it up, but I was really quickly trying to Shazam all of the different music since we knew the music.
It was relevant.
Yeah. So, You're My Thrill. You do something to me. You send chills right through me when I look at you because you're my thrill. Where's my will? Why this strange desire that keeps morning higher when I look at you? I can't keep still. You're my thrill. I don't know if that refers to Petey or if it refers to Angela.
What if she's playing that game just to be kind of like a jerk? Oh.
I think maybe she's on the playlist. Oh, I mean, in the car.
I will definitely, she's just trying to seduce Angela. It's fine. I see her. I see right through her lies.
Anyway, but back to Lady True. Is her daughter's named Bian? Is her daughter named Bian? Bian. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I wrote that Bian is my child now. I'm going
to
kidnap her.
I love her. Also love. Okay. So to your point, Carolyn, like I do think that specifically there are primarily like women in these roles because like the homegirl was like, everyone can come except you, pity bitch. Bye. Like, yeah. So specifically men are not allowed in the sanctuary, which except. I was like, oh, okay. Except for Adrian's old ass. I love, oh my God, I can't wait to get to that part. Sorry, I'm not going to get too ahead of myself. But yes, I think that, I love that they were trying to get answers in this, I'm assuming 13-year-old, 12-year-old kid comes through and is like, yeah, I have all the answers, let's go. And they're talking about like the new world and all that stuff, which I thought was interesting. New World Order is it a commonly an Illuminati thing? So I'm getting Illuminati vibes from this whole thing.
Well, I'm going to say it's even, I'm more worried about it than that. So when Veidt, I had a couple things about Veidt here, obviously. When Veidt, finished with this whole, you know, destroying New York thing, and he wanted to make, you know, the kind of utopian world going forward. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that's what this is.
Yeah.
And that, like, it's not just that it's, you know, we're saying like, it's not a figurative first wonder of the new world. The new world hasn't started yet. It's going to start in 3 days, which, you know, we'll talk about that in a minute. And it could mean like literally a wiping out of all humanity and starting from scratch with a totally new world or something along that magnitude. We don't know. I think we can't take that as a kind of her just saying it, like,
yeah, you know,
to be a thing. I mean, I think mm-hmm. There's real meaning behind this is the first wonder of the new world.
Mm-hmm.
But they go to the Vivarium. And if everybody remembers, the Vivarium from the Arctic Retreat mm-hmm. is where Adrian took all of his faithful employees and poisoned them and watched them die. So I think them being uncomfortable in the Vivarium, I don't know that. I think we're supposed to be worried about them in the Vivarium. They obviously don't know what happened in Adrian's Vivarium because he would have covered that up pretty completely. Like maybe he just, you know, said they were all in New York, but we know that there is that connection, that Vivarium is the murder spot.
I missed that it was called the Vivarium. So all I was looking at in her house was like, God, I want to live in this house. Cause it's so
beautiful, right? It's so gorgeous. Oh my God. Did anyone catch, True calling both Veidt and Judd great men within basically like the same frame, even though they're most obviously like not good men. I feel like she knows more than she probably knows that Veidt's not a good man, and she probably knows Judd isn't either. So I wonder, like, I just have this feeling that she has like latent meaning behind every little thing that she says. Like, she knows more than she's letting on, obviously. Yeah. It's pretty obvious. Well,
she seems to be doing like that, oh God, that thing when they were both speaking Vietnamese, like that, mm-hmm.
that was so cool. Oh my God.
That was really cool. And it tripped me out. But yeah, that seems to be a very real metaphor. Like, she'll say one thing and she'll definitely be doing another.
Without batting an eye, her mm-hmm. facial expressions mm-hmm. doesn't even change. Like, I think the actress Hong Chau, right? Like, is amazing. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Her face doesn't move an inch. And so like the three of them on screen together, I think someone pointed out that they're, you know, all 40 plus, like leading this show, like, and the energy ignited by the three of them on a screen together was so much for me. Mm-hmm. And then they started, Maury's just talking shit about Adrian Veidt, or talking about how old he is, and the energy that they have is so good.
So do we think that, like, so she may know that he's, you know, whatever, good. My guess is that she, like, Veidt has left stuff like good and evil, and someone is a good man means nothing because...
Oh, yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, she's obviously talking shit. Like, she's being shady. That's why I thought it was interesting, because she's describing these two men as great men, which we obviously, as the audience, know they're not. And at least one person in the room knows that Judd isn't, and at least one person in the room knows that Adrian Veidt isn't. So, like, I'm
pretty sure they all do.
Right. That's what I said. Well, I mean, Angel doesn't know anything about Adrian Veidt, so I assume she doesn't know anything about him. But like,
with Bobastis, so my guess is sleeping with Bobastis means you don't know what kind of guy Adrian Veidt is.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, well, we knew that. Like, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, she was like the Minutemen show. Like, she kind of reviewed all of that as kind of like pop culture history. Like, she doesn't really, which kind of actually frames how the rest of the world views them in the Watchmen, in their reality. Like, we kind of view them as like these big figures, but to most of the people, like Angela, probably just are like, oh, like characters on the TV show or whatever, you know?
Yeah. But she might be about to find out a lot more, or she's not letting on that she knows more. But do we think that Lady True reveres Veidt or wants to make him watch her do what he couldn't or something?
I think I think she knows where he is, and I think she's the reason why he is where he is, or at least she's working in concert with somebody, because she's got that statue. And the minute she was, or the minute Lori was like, "Why do you have him as old?" and I was like,
"No," she says flat out, "He is."
Yeah,
he was. Yeah.
She said he is old. Mm-hmm. She has him. I think she has him. I do think she has him.
I think the statue ages with him too.
Ooh, okay, Miss Greek God mythology over here. That's a Greek God mythology. Okay, explain.
I was actually thinking of that story with the guy in the painting that.
Oh, Dorian Gray. Oh, good. Ooh, even better reference. Okay.
Because I will say, Mike was looking younger, but I think that was because he was stopped trying to pretend to be something he wasn't. So that's a whole other story. We'll get there in a minute.
I love the idea of the door. I love the Dorian Gray thing. Like, I really, that's a wacky, that's wild. All right.
Especially, so do you want a really random connection? Do you want me to give you, did you guys read any of the kind of random stuff I posted in the Twitter group?
I read the thing about the terrorist guy. I didn't read that.
McVeigh. Yeah.
So we'll go through this real quick and then get right back to it. But there is in PDPedia, you should go read it. There is a transcript of an interview after Lori and Dan take down Timothy McVeigh. And for those who don't remember, that was the Oklahoma City bombing, also in Oklahoma, with a domestic terrorist. Killed 168 people, 19 of which were children under the age of 6. So, yeah, so he's a pretty big monster. But they stopped him in this universe, so that never, the Oklahoma City bombing never happened. But what I was, the other thing that was interesting, which is kind of a little bit off the course, is that the detective is Detective David Latimer. And one David Latimer is a guy who is famous for owning a terrarium, which he put together. And a terrarium is a sealed off bottle, corked bottle, and in it is plants. And he made this terrarium some 50 years ago, and he watered it that one time before he put the cork in, and it has maintained an ecosystem ever since. And basically the water has gone up to the roof and then come back down and gone up and maintained for like 50 years. So he made a biodome. And as I'm sitting here watching this scene, they are essentially in the vivarium, which is very much a biodome. So that might be on the mind with this episode airing. I'm still thinking she's going to like destroy the world or something, and that's where they're going to live.
Oh, wow.
And maybe that's where Adrian is. Maybe he's in some kind of a biodome. But that was my big thought for that. All right. So where are we?
Are we going to Lake Babies?
Yeah, are we at Lake Baby?
Yeah, I think we're at Lake
Baby. I thought they were cute in like a frog sort of way. Like,
oh my gosh, I was terrified.
the whole scene was so disturbing. Like the crying baby, all of it, him throwing the baby back into the lake. Like,
So think about this from the beginning of the show. So this is the brilliance of this show, and maybe I'm just reading too much into it because of my own story, but. There's the part where the husband catches the egg rolling off the stairs and handles it so gently. And here you have Adrian with actual babies that these people gave up their whole world for. And he's just kind of tossing them around and I think, you know, you're supposed to understand, yes, it's horrific. Yes, it's viscerally upsetting, but he's been there for 4 years. He has tried everything to turn these things into people, and it's driving him nuts because they really are only programmed to do what they're programmed to do, which is probably
still gross and upsetting.
I mean, maybe he tried to actually raise one like a normal person instead of microwaving them, but
no, he's crazy. But I mean, you know, that's what you're doing here, Adrian. It's like you need help to escape, so you microwave. And yeah, how did he figure out how to make this thing? He must have known it from Bobastis, right? From creating Bobastis. But
we did get confirmation that he didn't create these particular.
No, we did. Yeah, yeah. But he did grow them to adult size.
Yes.
And they have memories
incubated or whatever. Yeah.
I mean, I thought for sure he was that was like he was cooking them to eat them. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it.
Oh, no, that would have been. Oh.
Yeah, I think I would have had to walk away.
It's worse than, okay, maybe it can survive in the water, but that is a no.
Well, that's where he got them from, right? So they were already in the water. I don't know.
This is really interesting because, again, with me and my my lyric searches, the song in that scene that he's listening to while he's making the microwave babies, because those are microwave babies, everybody. You can get them from Orville Redenbacher. These are my jokes. I'm sorry.
What's the song?
It's called "Do Your Thing" by Leroy Sibbles. And the reason why it's interesting is because I cannot for the life of me find the lyrics. And I've been sitting here Googling
Maybe
it.
There aren't lyrics. Maybe it was like a big improv thing.
I did hear the caption says something like indecipherable singing
reggae,
or something
reggae.
Like that. Yeah,
But remember, he was listening to reggae with a determination in the previous one. So he had thought he had found a purpose, which was going up against the game warden. And he was listening to a very purpose-driven reggae song. And now this is like he was frustrated when he was listening to it this time. He was just kind of like he was stress eating that horrible cake that I don't think has gotten any better in 4 years.
Wow.
And he's like all stressed out, like whatever. So he nukes the babies and he listens to reggae. And then what happens?
and then he takes the microwave babies and he puts them to work, and we take him back to the manor and we see that he's murdered every single other person.
So I don't know that it matters, because obviously these are all children and not consenting adults, but is he murdered them, or did he kind of set them up and let them kill each other?
I think he did it.
I think he murdered.
You think
them.
He just killed everything? I mean, he said
something like he made a mess. Like he made like a reference to him having.
He had a rough night.
Yeah, he had a rough night. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's not dressing like the English gentleman anymore. He's dressing more like a dude from the 70s, with kind of like open shirts and longer hair and a looseness that makes him seem more like he's not trying to be proper. Like, you remember that letter last week that was all very playing along. I think he's done playing the game now. But I don't really know. And this was really less to us about what he was doing other than getting the babies out of the lake, more of like a reveal and an explanation of what's been going on with him.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we do get to find out that he's been there for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And again, of course, there's the whole bit where he says that, you know, to be alive, you have to have purpose, and that the clones were created with no purpose, but he gives them a purpose, I guess. But the whole thing really is that this escaping, whether or not there's anything to escape to, or it's possible, or whatever, he needs something to keep him going. He's tried, like, in the first year, he tried genetic experiments, and he tried the play, and he tried building things, and then he tried the hunting bit. And, like, it's just, like, these are all, like, it's like when you're getting to the end of the video game and there's nothing left to do.
Yeah.
He needs a bigger challenge, yeah. How do you challenge the world's smartest man? So this is what he set himself to, is escaping. And, again, we're not sure that he knows where he is, or did he sign on to do this? Were there terms? Obviously, we know Lady True is good at giving terms, and she took over his company right after he disappeared. So that was interesting. So my guess is that the deal might have gone down the way it went down with the Clarks.
Would he get got like that? Like, I mean, no disrespect.
If he
to Lady
wanted
Church,
to be,
but,
if she found out what happened, what he did, and had actual irrevocable evidence of what he did, she could expose him.
Yeah,
or have something over him. You know, and I don't see if she. I don't feel like she's the type of person who gives a fuck if. If exposing him meant the world went to hell, if she had a backup plan.
She's got something. I think she doesn't put people in situations where they could possibly say no.
Right, exactly.
So whatever it was, she had him, you know, whether that means that she's smarter or whether he's just old and tired, and maybe he thought he was tireder than he was. Maybe it was one of those things where she's like, yeah, I'm ready, like, let's go to this place where I don't have to worry about this and blah, blah, blah. And it maybe he just realized when he was there that, no, I'm going crazy and I can't do this.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you don't get too much. We do all of our suspicions about that he was trying to escape the whatever this world is.
Why did they cut to the moon? Remember they cut to the moon before they... Is it on the moon?
And I believe there are two scenes like that, right? Is am I wrong or do I have these things confused? But I think there's that scene where it's the moon over Angela's house. And then at the end, the moon when Lady True and Will are looking at the moon. There's another fade. So I think the moon is important. And it did make me think that maybe he found the moon, the dark side of the moon, maybe? But...
It's another Marvel reference, and I refuse to listen to read the moon. The watcher is on the moon. So Manhattan's up there chilling with the moon, and so chilling with the watcher, as is Vite. That's it.
Who watches the Watchman? Sorry.
Yeah.
The watcher watches. Well.
Now we find ourselves back with things fall apart. Unless I have missed something.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So I believe, yes, she returns home again. She's upset because Laurie told her that she had talked to Cal and Cal hadn't called and told her. But to be fair, he hadn't been home. And I don't think that they have cell phones.
No, they have the pagers.
Yeah, they have the pagers. So like, how could he have told her that she was there? She just wanted to pick a fight and she'd miss it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you said that.
but we could talk a little bit about things fall apart, and is that a symbol for what's going on the show, and how it relates. Obviously we're supposed to pay attention to it because it's the title of the episode is a quote from the book.
I have a very interesting connection between things fall apart and what happens with Lady True and her daughter. Would you like me to get into that now or wait until we get to Lady True and her daughter?
Do we want to talk about, I think we talked a bit about, you know, what is Calvin's accident?
Oh, yes.
And how he doesn't like to lie, which I think is another thing, is he's just too good to be true. He doesn't like lying like Superman.
Interesting because his name is Cal.
Cal. Oh, yes.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a lot.
You said yeah. Calvin, but yeah, I mean, his name is Cal. I noticed that. I was like, his name is Cal.
The black Superman, I think, on Earth 9.
Calvin Ellis, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, I mean, guys, honestly, I'm not going to lie. I thought this was way too far-fetched, but when the meteor hit, I was like, what if that was Cal? And that's bizarre and wild, but like, his name's Cal. Cal-El. Yeah. Like, I was just like, what if he, in this most bizarre, wildest thing, what if he was in a little meteor thing. I have no idea, but continue.
All he wanted to do is stay home and be the best dad ever. I think the picture, I didn't recognize it, but it looked a little Hiroshima Lovers to me, the picture behind where he's sitting.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't get a really good look at it, so I can't say for sure. He's real pretty.
Yeah. He is, which is why I always think it's interesting that no one ever addresses him by Mr. Abar or anything.
But that's Abar's surname.
Yeah, but like, right, that's what I'm saying. Like, they always call him Cal. Every time we've ever heard anyone referencing him, it's always Cal by his first name. And I think it's weird because if I've never met you in my life and you start referring to me as my first name, I'd be like, who the fuck are you? Why are you calling me my first name? But like, Laurie's done it multiple times now, and I think that other characters have done it, possibly like any other characters that interact with him. We've never heard him referred to with a title or anything, or even just Angela's husband. Like, it's always someone's just always a Cal. It's weird.
Is Cal possessed by Manhattan?
No.
Manhattan, he's not capable, and that was the whole thing in the first episode. He's not capable of passing as human.
Yeah, but can he? How do you know still? I mean, we were talking so long about, like, he's on Mars being fed his line. I mean, how do we know? Just putting that out there for a theory.
I don't think, there is some theory that scene, I don't know if I said this already in the episode. If I did, I'll cut it out. Where that scene where he is on Mars building the castle might be now, and we know that all the Vite stuff is happening over years, so probably starting 7 years ago. What if at 7 years, meaning now, is when he escapes, and that's why Dr. Manhattan destroys the castle on Mars?
Ooh, okay. Okay, I like that. I don't know, though.
But how come nobody else can see all the buffalo and other stuff? So.
Unless it's just not there, unless, or I mean,
maybe right, it's like a little dome.
Yeah. If Dr. Manhattan is Zack Snyder, he's trying to think of a way to blow up the buffalo with a big explosion. With lots of violence and dark, gritty colors.
I think we're gonna get the dark. But yeah, no, I don't know. But that was something that somebody, I don't remember where I read it, but I'll see if I can find the link. But I thought that was a pretty good observation.
Oh, another thing I want to point out: the lake babies remind me a lot of the baby raining squids. Okay, there's organic material just wet and sloppy and gross with eyeballs. Like, there's some similarities in our flesh color too. So, like, there's some similarities. That's why I was like, they're all connected.
Are they baby squid people?
That's what I'm saying. Maybe they're like the same technology that's making, because I firmly am on the baby squids, it's all team hoax, because I know that the big squid was a hoax. So baby squids have to be a hoax. That's just furthering along this lie. So the same technology that's making these little baby rain, like baby squid rains, is the same technology that's making the things in the lake. Anyway, that's my
what if it's like a runoff or something from the baby?
From the lake.
Pollution.
Oh gosh, guys. Oh. So I was talking online with some people, and you know, we were kind of talking about the similarities between Okonkwo and Rorschach. You know, and I mean, these are not deep, deep similarities, but again, they're fighting against what they see as a corruption in their culture, and they don't give up. They would rather face death than give up at the end, and they have very strong ideas of the way society should be. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, that they're the same, but I think it is interesting that there's kind of that overtone of they both ended up dying in the face of, you know, what I think, you know, Rorschach could see as complete corruption of his society.
And this isn't Things Fall Apart, right? I think I missed
Things Fall Apart. Sorry, yeah, we're talking about Things. I'm sorry.
I want to. Yes. No. I have a tie into that because as the episodes end. There's Lady True's daughter, and she wakes up and she's having a dream. And in the dream, she talks about how she was walking and walking, and there were men who had told her to walk, and her feet still hurt. And her mother looks at her, and her mother was like, good. Mm-hmm. And then her mother makes her walk back to bed. Now, when I was a kid, I watched X-Files. And one of the episodes in the X-Files was this episode about the massacre at My Lai. And I was like 12 or 13 when I watched this episode. And it was all about, in short, it was all about how the ghosts of the people who were killed at My Lai went and killed all the soldiers that killed them. So it was a great episode. But the thing about it is that, number one, it involves, we're not going to go into huge details. Suffice it to say that this was a U.S. war crime. People should be aware of it happening. And just like the Greenwood Massacre, people need to own their history. So My Lai happened. The Vietnam War was a terrible thing, and the United States was in a place we shouldn't have been in. Anyway, so basically what happened in this is that a bunch of people, America came in, and America initially thought that America had a place in trying to negotiate these two things, because there's something called the Truman Doctrine, and Wendy can feel free to correct me on this if I'm wrong, but the idea was to stop.
I don't know that we need to get into the whole. We can talk about it if you want, but well, I think the crux of it is this: this is a huge story, and we can post links to it. And it was a thing that escalated and escalated until it just became incredibly inhuman.
It was the war, but the My Lai is widely considered the worst massacre.
Yeah.
And it ties into Things Fall Apart because it's also about the same people who come to a place where they think that they belong and they don't belong there, and people who end up killing themselves in the face of facing people who recognize that they don't belong in that particular place. So when Cal is reading Things Fall Apart, Lady True is feeding her daughter, and her daughter is dreaming of that same information, just switched
to a different locale.
I think that might, I'm going to be like, that might be an oversimplification. I mean, there's a ton of complexities to both of those stories. I'm not saying that the U.S. was right, neither one of them. Totally, obviously, the massacre and it was, you know, the colonialism in Africa, you know, these are horrible things. I think that it's especially with the massacre that you're talking about, we'll post some pictures, because like if you go there, there are museums, and the way that Americans portrayed in museums are ways that you don't see in your mind. You don't get it. I feel like this is the way that the Kurdish are going to portray us in their museums in a few years. But it's incredibly disturbing stuff. So make sure that you're able to view it without getting triggered. But we will post links to that on the blog. And yeah, I mean, this is, I don't know if they're going to specifically tie into that, but this is horrific, and a lot of horrific things happened during the Vietnam War. And of course, colonialism was a lot of horrific things. I think one of the things in specifically in Things Fall Apart, there was a lot of forcible stuff, but there was also a lot of indoctrination into Christianity and into that was infecting the society, and people were moving away from their own ways to adopt these other ways. And I think it was also the part, like, where, you know, with Rorschach, where he's feeling like his people have failed him. I mean, the people had failed him because people are weak and sheep and all this other stuff. I mean, it's like I think he would have fought to the end. Okonkwo would have fought to the end if the people had his back. Right. But it was just one of those things where it was like, yeah, you know, he would have fought to the last breath. And I think the people kind of became docile and gave in, and that's what really kind of broke his heart. That's when things, and it was, yeah, so it's like, it's more insidious, and you get that with Bite, and you get that with this, where they're trying to culturally infest, and I'm sure we did a lot of propaganda during Vietnam, I'm not dismissing that at all, but I think more than just a flat out violence, I mean, there's a lot of this cultural indoctrination and manipulation and, you know, thought manipulation, and maybe the squids are part of that. There's a lot of little things that are happening that are preparing people for that kind of idea. So that's
the moral of the. I think that the point that you guys are both making is interesting, because it ties into like something I said earlier, how trauma can be passed from generation to generation, and we're literally seeing that happen.
Definitely
with homegirl and her daughter, but also like Will literally says, how is this any different from how you're treating your daughter to how I'm treating my granddaughter? Like the pills, when we talked about what are the pills, like will they, you know, give her memories of his past? Like that makes a strong case for it. Are we talking, we've spent a lot of time talking about legacy and passing memories on, and how a decision made 100 years ago can ripple even from, you know, through generations. So is that what this is? She's talking about legacy to the Clarks, you know, about how they're, you know, when they die, it's over for them if they don't have a kid.
Yep.
And so like she places a huge importance on that. Obviously, if she does, then Will has to as well. He came to find her. Will, you know, Angela's finding her family tree. Something is very important about lineage here and legacy, and it has to tie into whatever they're planning. And that's why I think that's the most important thing that we really should, at least in some way, shape, or form, have to like keep an eye out for in the next coming episodes, because I do think that's going to factor in.
You know what's interesting is when Wendy talks about cultural legacy, because you know how culture can indoctrinate people. One of the things that, you know, obviously I talk a lot about how I work at Disneyland, but one of the things that was drilled into me early on was the idea that I am a custodian of a legacy. And every time you say that, people nod. But when you see how much, and when you see how much on the minute detail, how much that name commands respect, and how much people are impacted by what they, you know, by what we do, by what they do, you really realize how much effort it takes to create a legacy. Mm-hmm. And it puts into perspective, at least, how hard these characters are working, and how much Lady True has to believe in what she's doing. So it also puts into respect the idea of, you know, how the show plays. Obviously, Lady True is the bad guy, and Vite is also the bad guy.
It's Watchmen.
Well, yeah, they're all bad. And it's interesting how people will go, how far people will go to preserve the notion of a legacy on every level, because it's only taken, it took 60 something years for people to immediately associate Disneyland in particular with a certain attitude and a certain behavior and certain ways that people, you know, and certain ways that people act and how things are supposed to be expected. And it's like yesterday, there was a story about, and this all relates to Watchmen, I swear, guys, but there was a story about a guy who was on Tarzan's treehouse, and he was trying to show his kids that Tarzan's treehouse, the rope bridge, there's a rope bridge, Tarzan's treehouse, the rope bridge wouldn't break. So he was jumping up and down on the rope bridge, and it broke.
Oh, my.
And everybody, you know, a lot of us were thinking about the idea, but the fact of the matter is that everybody thinks Disneyland is so good at what it does that people don't think when they get there. And that's the kind of stuff that Veidt and Moore were talking about. People get into a place where if you convince them of an idea that is so good, or that, you know, they believe in so much, or that they come to trust, then they get stupid. And they jump on a rope bridge until they break through and almost fall three stories.
Oh.
So all the cast members had to evacuate them, and they had to shut down the rope bridge. And I was sitting there and I was thinking about it, and I was like, this guy's going to sue, and he was acting stupid. And then I realized, yeah, he was acting. He assumed immediately that everything was going to work. This was something that was going to work 100%. And that's the thing that, you know, True and Veidt and everybody else has played into, is building this concept that really exists, that if you believe in something so completely that is made by a human being, then how could it be wrong? And that's why you have to have different perspectives and different ideals. The end.
I'm sitting here talking about different perspectives, feeling so broken that it's no longer the Swiss Family Robinson treehouse.
Oh, no.
Talk about forgotten legacy.
and that's another thing about Disneyland, is that there are so many pieces of legacy, and you're really taught when you work there, and I think all the fans understand this too, the diehard fans who make these blogs and who have these YouTube channels that just explore in depth everything that goes into it, because it's something that has such intense cultural relevance. So, you know, we talk a lot about the culture war, but the truth of the matter is that, you know, yes, business is a very important part of it. Controlling the culture means you control people. I mean, it means you control the destiny of everyone. That's why watching Watchmen, for me, and seeing things and hearing the different perspectives, especially from the Black community, it just makes me angry. I mean, like, I knew what Black Wall Street was, but that was only because I've tried to learn about different perspectives actively. But not being taught it, not being aware of it, and not being taught and aware, listening to this stuff, I you know, it's hard not to shake the idea that you feel like you're being lied to. So I'm pissed. Full on. And, you know, I want to make sure that everybody gets a fair shake. You know what I mean? But that's why shows like this are important. That's why you need to renew it.
Can I put forth a theory, guys?
Yeah.
Go for it. We've been talking about legacy. We've been talking about cloning. We've been talking about creating life. Who's creating life? Lady True or Dr. Manhattan? Veidt's created life with Booth Bastis. We've had, this has kind of been the theme, cracking eggs. Fertility motifs, things like that. I want to know if, just hear me out, this is going to get a little wild. this is True and Will have focused on legacy and passing on their memories and their stories as part of their, is very important to them. She's doing it her way, he's doing it his way. So we have her offering a baby to a family that cannot conceive on their own. From what we can see, Angela, we don't know if Angela can have kids. They've not been addressed, but she has three that are not her biological kids. I wonder how A, Will feels about that, her grandfather. Can be based on Lady True's line of thinking, those kids wouldn't be a part of her legacy. They're not her biological legacy. They don't really belong to her. She picked them up in the tragedy and they're hers now. I wonder if her grandfather feels the same way. I also wonder, here's where I get wild, if this was anticipated, if we are speculating wildly about Cal, if he was put in her life to give her heirs.
But she would have been, this was 3 years ago.
I'm not talking about timetables. I'm just throwing it out there. I don't know what, we specifically don't know when they met. We know they met when there was an accident. We don't know what time frame they met. We don't know if, obviously they met before the White Knight. I'm not even talking about the White Knight. Things have been, we're all talking about connections and things being put into place. Things have been in the works for a long time since, I guess, before Vietnam became a state. So this is a wild theory, but we're talking about legacy and kids specifically and babies and creation and life. And I just feel like it's interesting that the series is focused on a woman who has three kids that are not her biological kids and another woman who does not have kids and probably isn't going to have kids. And then another woman who has a kid who we strongly probably feel is a clone of herself. So I'm interested in seeing how this continues almost every woman we've been introduced to has not had a biological kid of their own. And we're talking about shit. So I'm interested in I'm just kind
we
of.
We talked. Yeah. So we did talk last week, and I'll just throw this out there before everybody gets into it about how her avatar or her identity that she's taken on is Lady True. And Lady True's thing was about how she didn't want to be a wife. Mm-hmm. Let me just grab the quote. Hold on. We'll just read it for the sake of reading it. She said, "I'd like to ride storms, kill sharks in the open sea, remind anybody of the Black Freighter, drive out the aggressors, reconquer the country, undo the ties of serfdom, and never bend my back to be the concubine / wife of whatever man." So her, and that is very similar to, again, I think we talked about this last week, is to what Lori said to Dan is they were leaving her mother's house at the end of Watchmen, mm-hmm. about how she was not ready for kids and she wanted to go wear leather and shoot a gun. So it's interesting to me how there's all this about mothering and I'm not necessarily sure that's her daughter.
That's what I'm saying. She calls her mom, but I don't know if that's actually her. We don't know. I'm getting strong. Yeah. That's her biological clone vibes, but yeah.
Yeah. I think that, you know, or maybe what she gave to Veidt was the first attempts and she kept the true cloning technologies to herself. And maybe clone doesn't necessarily mean clone. Maybe it means being able to mix any DNA cocktail that you want. mm-hmm. Or just being able to have, you know, two people have children that couldn't have children by other means. There's a large spectrum in there. But it is interesting that her avatar is one that did not want to be a mother.
Did not want to be a wife.
Right, that's true.
Because there's two different things. Being a wife and a mom are two different things. Because her avatar didn't want to be a wife, and it appears that she isn't one. Our current Lady True. So I think that's an interesting.
Yeah.
I think it is interesting. Yeah. Like, huh? Yeah. Exactly. And I think that Lori has never expressed in any medium that we've ever seen her or read her in, she's ever really expressed with that. And this is another thing that we talk about legacy is. This was a legacy that was passed down from her mom. And she's not going to be passing this legacy on to anyone else, you know?
Yeah, and Pedia specifically said that's why she and Dan broke up.
Yeah.
Next week's episode is how to dealing with the interdimensional anxiety. That was that really funny image with that cat.
Yeah. So
looking in a looking glass.
Wait.
and they have Hall of Mirrors.
Yeah. And we see his origin story. I think we're getting a little bit of that.
So worried for him.
the faceless people. So my question for everybody is, going into the next dimension, if you could visit one alternate dimension, what dimension would it be?
What?
Any dimension. Any there is a multiverse out there. Mm. You can either visit an alternate reality version of your life. You could go to the Marvel universe. You could go somewhere else. You could go to visit Stephen King, or you could do a universe where something happened that was different.
Oh, that's a hard one. You can't spring that on us.
I can't honestly do it, because I'll tell you, once you start unraveling that things, it's like, all right, so I'll tell you that my kids, we play Minecraft, and they keep wanting to go in creative mode, because in creative mode you can do whatever you want, right? You right. can make reality whatever you want. And I'm like, I mean, that's fun occasionally to do that, but then it's not the game, right? It's not, there's no purpose, there's no rules. If I can just generate as much cash as I want, what's the fun of going mining? What's the fun of building anything? What's the fun of, and I think that that's kind of the thing with life, is that you, and it's also with guilt, right? Is it like, if I just done this, if I just done that, and if you picked one reality, let's say you picked the reality when I got my father to go to the hospital when he first started showing symptoms, you know, then what about all the other people that I didn't save? Or what about the people that wouldn't exist because I did that? I mean, it's just a very, it's like time travel, right? It's like, if other dimensions are time traveling and you started unraveling, obviously I'd want to go to the dimensions where I could be with my parents, but would I not
have? But it wouldn't, it's not like time travel, because it doesn't affect our reality. Because I was going to say, if I was in a true reality, it would be an alternate dimension where we didn't, the Industrial Revolution was replaced with the Solar Revolution, where we, instead of kept burning more fossil fuels and laying steam engines, we would just convert to solar and energy. And then we would have different problems, but at least the Earth wouldn't be dying. So that's where I think I would be. Hey, I don't give a shit. I don't care. That's my reality. I'm sticking with it. No one argues with me. I don't care. That's where I'm going with it. I'll visit that reality. I'm good with that.
Tony?
Oh, man. Because I would pick something like dumb, like Super Smash Brothers or something, just to get all the characters.
That's like the vacation reality. Let's get it.
Yeah. Hang out with Mario. It'd be fun.
Hang out with crazy hands and the giant hands and Pikachu. I asked this question partly because, number one, I'm genuinely curious, and I was tweeting a lot this afternoon about His Dark Materials, because there's a scene in the new episode where they actually travel between dimensions and they go to our world, which isn't a spoiler because you know that they eventually do go to our world. But one of the characters asks, you know, maybe it's time to start thinking about what your dimension can do for our dimension. And I was like, dude, yes, bring our dimensions together, because I want a fun little animal friend. I want a fun friend. Mash them together. But I also wanted to ask the question, because halfway through asking it, I realized it would give you guys a little interdimensional anxiety.
Yes.
Oh,
one plug. Go read Kieran Gillen's Peter Cannon, which obviously is the character. I know we've said this before on this thing, but that one is a very heavily interdimensional, and they do it very creatively through the artwork. But he's the basis for Adrian Veidt, but not as not. I mean, he didn't destroy New York. But anyways, so go check it out. I'm looking for the link on the blog again.
Cool beans. All right, Wendy, do you want to take us out, or what do you want to do?
Yeah, sure. So that's it for this week. But if you'd like to contact Watchmen Podcast, you can email us at watchmentvpodcast@gmail.com. You can post a comment on our website, watchmenpodcast.com. You can leave us a voicemail at 918-200-9103. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram at Watchmen Podcast. On Twitter, you can follow us at Watchmen Talk. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher Radio. And we always love it when you give us a rating or a review. Watchmen Podcast is part of the DC TV Podcast Network. So if you are interested in other DC shows, you can check out Batwoman Podcast, Black Lightning Podcast, DC TV Classics, DC's Legends of Tomorrow Podcast, iZombie Radio, Krypton Podcast, Stargirl Podcast, Supergirl Radio, Swamp Thing Radio, and the Flash Podcast. You can subscribe to DC TV Podcasts on Apple Podcasts, and follow DC TV Podcasts on Twitter, and like DC TV Podcasts on Facebook. Until next time, tick tock, tick tock.